You're listening to episode 15 of the Rebel Buddhist Podcast, where I teach you how to drink less and feel free. Welcome to the Rebel Buddhist Podcast, where we explore how to use the science of psychology, Eastern spiritual practices like mindfulness and compassion, and the game-changing work of self-coaching so you can free your mind and free your life. I'm your host, Anna Verzoni. Hey, hey, silly humans. Oh my gosh, we are so silly, right? Us humans, we do all kinds of shizzle that just makes no freaking sense, right? We know what we should do, we know what we shouldn't do, and we do the opposite a lot of the time. So I suppose that's why I know a lot of you out there identify as rebels too, right? You want to go against the grain, even against the grain of your own mind. So I know that a lot of you out there aren't the spiritual types that are like quiet Zen garden, whispering, wispy types, right? I know a lot of you find that kind of scene of the spiritual world sort of uncomfortable. Maybe like fine for a retreat, but otherwise it feels like you don't fit in. And maybe it's because you aren't quiet and whispery, right? But you might even be loud. You might take up space. You're dancing to the beat of your own drum and doing it out loud. And maybe you're the, like, shall we say, a sort of whiskey and malas type of person, right? I see you. You meditate, then go to yoga, and then go out for a ski or a mountain bike ride, and then you meet up with everyone for drinks afterwards, and dare I say, party a little bit. And a lot of you have been asking me to share how I was able to drink less and cut back on the booze. So I wanted to share what I can in this podcast episode, because even though I teach this in detail in a multi-week course, I feel if I can share the key tools here, it can plant the seed for many of you to make a healthy shift. And literally, if you do the four things I'm talking about, it can be really effective. So this episode is for you, Rebel One. That person that doesn't identify as an alcoholic, but would like to drink less, whether for health reasons, sleep reasons, energy reasons, and just to be damn free of a habit that doesn't serve you. And let me just say that again, because I've been doing this a long time, and I know people will still misunderstand me, but I have to try. The tools I talk about in this episode are not intended for someone with the diagnosis of alcoholism to use without the recommendation of their healthcare provider. So if you identify as an alcoholic or have received that as a diagnosis, please do listen and then talk about these tools with your provider about how you might use them or some of them in conjunction with your treatment plan for abstinence, not to drink less. Deal? Okay, good. Here we go. So, for a lot of people, being rebellious means getting away with things. That is one of my favorite things, right? Getting away with things. As long as it's not imposing on other people's freedoms, I love getting away with things, right? Or maybe rebellious means being naughty. In fact, I almost called this podcast Naughty Buddhist, but like having history as a nurse, I didn't want to deal with all the naughty nurse sexual innuendo things that would likely ensue from that name. And for a lot of people, drinking is also a part of that identity, especially when it's a rebellious identity, a part of a shit ton of fun memories, epic vacations, crazy adventures all over the world, wild nights with great stories to tell. And that was fun and good then. But lately, now the drinking has become a habit, one where maybe someone starts out wanting to just have one drink, two drinks, or no drinks, but because everyone else is drinking more, or I deserve it after a hard day of skiing or a hard day of work, or I just need to relax, then drinking now isn't part of a special event. It's now cutting into their freedom. So I want to start off this episode about how to drink less by inviting you to consider the notion that drinking less or not drinking at all is what's actually rebellious. not buffering when the whole damn world is buffering all around us, not just with alcohol, but food and screen time and social media and porn and online shopping and overworking, right? No moral judgments about any of the above. Just acknowledging that all those things are keeping us from being present with what is. So, okay, Rebel Buddha, what is your story about how it evolved? And when did you realize things might need to change? For me, there were a couple of times. Once I was walking down the jetway to get on a plane. I think we were on our way to Nepal, and maybe our daughter was about 3. And there was a long pause in the line, and we were standing there in the jetway ramp with ads up on either side of the walls, right? It's this like skinny jetway ramp getting on the plane. And meantime, we're stopped by an ad that shows an older white man with silvery gray hair holding a glass of red wine. It's quiet. It's like 3 a.m. and everyone is exhausted and wanting to sit down on the plane. And in the middle of this silence, my daughter points to this ad, very large ad, and says very loudly, "Look, mommy, it's like you." Well, because I'm not a white male with gray hair, it was obvious what she was referring to in the picture. And I'm pretty sure it was obvious to everyone else in line too, that it was that glass of wine. And I sort of nervously laughed it off and I kept walking, hoping everyone wasn't judging me and that they were too tired to put two and two together. After all, at that time, a lot seemed to be going over people's heads, right? So what the F, I thought to myself, I didn't want to model that for my daughter. I didn't want her to associate me with wine. And I'm not mom shaming here because mamas have to do what they have to do. And I was right there with you. But the mommy wine culture was not helping me either, right? This whole idea that it's this normal thing to overdrink as a mom. And it felt fun at first to joke and send texts in the early afternoon to my friends, like, anybody ready for a drink yet? Or having a glass at 3 p.m. saying, well, it's 5 p.m. somewhere. Ha ha. And here's the second time I realized things needed to change. I used to watch movies and see them showing moms who brought wine and water bottles to the park. And I was like, oh my God, that is so fucked up. Who does that? Then one day I was exhausted after work. I'd so much stuff to do around the house and I just wanted to do some yoga or go for a run, but the babysitter was leaving and we were getting packed up for me to take my kiddo to the park. And man, that was the last thing I felt like doing. I was so tired, but I knew my kiddo would love it. So I opened the fridge to pack some snacks and I saw a bottle of Chardonnay. And I opened it and I started filling my water bottle with it. And as I was pouring it in, I was thinking, whoa, am I actually doing this? How did I get here? You see, I didn't start off being a regular wine drinker. In my 20s, I used to drink just sometimes, and I was too broke to ever drink too much on a regular basis. Then I started to make money in my 30s, right? Bit of a late bloomer, right? Maybe I was a climbing guide for most of my 20s, and I found I could afford more than one beer when I was out at sushi in my 30s. So I'd have two drinks at dinner and at parties I'd have more, but those weren't even weekly. And then dated an alcoholic, got used to drinking most nights a week. And then when we broke up, I went back to only drinking a few days a week versus every day. And sometimes I drink way too much, but it wasn't a regular thing. But, you know, I was definitely noticing I was drinking more than I used to. And at that time, it didn't have many bad consequences for me other than a few like, whoa, what happened last night, right? And I was in a good mood when I drank. I would tell awesome stories, make people laugh. And I never, ever drank to feel better. It was something I just did for fun with friends. So then I'm a multi-passionate. Started kind of piling on all of my different passions into different aspects of my career, the motherhood, got my doctoral degree. And as my life got busier, and then after having a kid and I couldn't like just head out for a run when I was home alone with her, you know, I would come home stressed and overwhelmed and couldn't go to yoga or do the run. So I tried to do yoga at home, but my baby would just crawl all over me, right? And it didn't have the relaxing effect I needed when that was going on. And I tried other things like reading, taking baths, listening to music, but just none of it worked. And I still felt like bored or anxious or restless. And then one day I saw a half bottle of Sauvignon Blanc in the fridge and I had a glass at 5 o'clock and I felt really relaxed. And then I had another. And the next day when I came home, I did it again. All right. So suffice it to say, I started drinking regularly. And after a few years, I found I wouldn't stop after a drink or two, even when I would start the night out by saying I just wanted 2 drinks. And I was in awe of people that would leave half a glass of wine on the table. Like I would have a small pang of irritability if I went to a party and they didn't have alcohol. And I admit it, I loved wine tastings. You know, I was born in California, loved wine tastings, wine with cheese, wine with steak, grabbing a drink with the girls after skiing on the mountain when I could have a cold glass of Sauvignon Blanc with some truffle fries like in Telluride with that epic view from the bar, right? And then when I turned 40, drinking started to affect my health. I was getting crappy sleep. I felt worse the next day, foggy brain after the big nights. I couldn't get off the couch and go for the mountain bike ride that would clear my head like I used to. But I was still functioning really well, right? In fact, like my daughter and my husband, they were like, awesome mom, awesome wife. I exercised, traveled, excelled in my career, got a doctoral degree. And actually during that time of getting my doctoral degree, I actually stopped drinking completely for a year of my doctoral program because I knew I couldn't raise a kid, kick ass at work, and run my international doctoral project in Nepal without good sleep or feeling less than 100% on top of my game. But that was the thing. I could stop completely when I wanted, right? I stopped when I was pregnant, stopped the year I was getting my doctorate. I stopped for 30 days every change of season when I do my cleanses, right? Because yes, I'm one of those yoga-doing, cleanse-loving people who likes things that stress out the liver, right? I was good at not drinking at all, but what I sucked at was drinking less. And these issues went on, trying way too many times to drink in moderation without success. So eventually I got really fed up. I was totally over it. I decided to put my clinical psych degree, my meditation studies, myriad coach training, all my healthcare studies into laser focus around this issue. I studied with leaders in the field, learned a lot about managing urges and the science of addiction, not just to alcohol, but sugar, shopping, gambling, porn, you name it, right? I dove into how to develop healthier habits, as well as managing our minds and negative emotions. And as a healthcare provider with a doctorate in nursing, I geeked out on the science of it all and got extensive training specifically on how to coach people who want to stop over drinking. And, you know, really, that was through applying it to myself that I wanted to share it with others. Because before, I thought I had to either drink it or not, because when I drank too much. But I was finally able to cut back. And now I'm actually able to drink less. I can decide how much I want to drink, and it actually happens. And for those of you that have tried, you get how crazy this is, right? It is amazing. I blew my own mind. So I'm going to share some of the key tools that helped me. But first, I want to ask you, why even decide to drink less? Why even decide to stop altogether? Because there's no moral judgment about alcohol here. Right? I'll get into the fundamentalists that have an all or nothing mindset about how to be spiritual in another episode. But for now, I want to ask you, why would you want to cut back or stop? And I want you to go beyond because it's bad or unclean or toxic. If you believe all those things, fine, that's fine. Go ahead. But I have found those aren't the reasons that help make a commitment stick. It has to come from inside. So instead, what is it inside you that is urging you to cut back? What is that still small voice inside of you saying you're missing out on when you're over drinking? Well, what I know for sure is freedom. It may seem like freedom to drink whenever you feel like it and for however much you want to drink. And it may feel like constraining your freedom when you stop at one or two drinks or when you don't drink at all. But my friends, what's going on when you change your relationship to alcohol is you get your freedom back. When you need a drink to feel better, when you need a drink to deal with boredom or the lack of self-care in your life, when you need a drink to loosen up or to have fun at a party, when you need a drink because you can't sit with the urge to have another when you said you'd stop, maybe from friends continuing to drink or just not wanting to be uncomfortable, that is not freedom. I remember when I was studying with the Venerable Ani Robina Corten at Vajrapani Institute in Boulder Creek, and she was talking about how she used to smoke, and I used to too, so I was listening attentively. And when she spoke about finally quitting, I remember her saying, "I loved how I was free from needing something. I was no longer attached. I no longer needed something to feel good." Yes, I thought, exactly. Here it is again, right? Attachment causing suffering. Needing something to be happy. Suffering. And that's what my journey with alcohol was like that led me to stop. Wanting, ultimately, to be free. Sure, I felt like crap when I drank too much of it and had some challenges with cutting back, right? My drinking wasn't even a huge problem compared to most. It was a small problem in this scheme of things. It was a problem like eating too many potato chips, affecting me negatively, but not my family or my friends or my work, you know, in this obvious way. And yet when I looked for help, it seemed there was nobody out there who could tell me how to drink less. Because you see, at the time, I didn't want to quit drinking altogether. I just wanted to stop over drinking. I didn't want to go to meetings or get a sponsor. I didn't want to do 12 steps. Didn't want to always be sober. I just wanted less Chardonnay per night. You know, a sort of middle way of moderation there. And now you may have noticed that I use a lot of tools in my coaching to help people do things like finally free themselves of anxiety, create the confidence they need to leave the job or the mediocre relationship, lose the weight they've struggled with for years. And all those cutting-edge tools are based on mind management from Buddhist psychology, applied positive psychology, and brain science, right? And as it turns out, those exact tools work on drinking as well. So here are some of the key steps that can help you reestablish your equanimity when it comes to your relationship with booze. Step one is learning the skill of managing urges without resisting them, learning to allow them. And it may not be obvious, but this step is about unlearning desire. So in Buddhism, this kind of desire is called tanha. It literally means thirst. So pretty appropriate when it comes to drinking less, right? The reason I wanted to drink and the reason I overdrank was because my desire was really strong. And I had that desire in the first place because I had literally taught myself how to desire and overdesire drinking. And I knew I could just as easily teach myself the opposite. I taught myself that, and it became a habit over time because of that dang motivational triad I always talk about, how our brain is motivated by avoiding pain, seeking pleasure, and doing what's easy. Alcohol fits the bill for all of that. It's easy. It helps us avoid pain by helping us check out a little bit from what's going on. And pleasure, we get a dopamine hit, right? And depending on your genetic predisposition, it may feel exponentially better for you than others. And drinking less or not drinking when you want to, that goes against all that. So once again, learning to be uncomfortable is a key skill. So from my years studying applied positive psychology and the science of habits, I knew that once someone learns how to allow a desire without acting on it, rather than trying to eliminate or resist the desire, they're allowing it, they're able to interrupt the dopamine reward cycle they're stuck in and permanently cut back on what they're doing to buffer away their negative feelings, whether that's watching too much Netflix, using shopping therapy or emotional eating, or overdrinking. So mindfulness helps you learn how to stay with that urge and not act on it. And I use it all the time. And you know, the difference between allowing and resisting, the kind of classic example is you have this big beach ball and you're trying to push it under the water. And you can keep it underwater. It's like resisting the urge is pushing it down, pushing it away. And you can keep pushing and pushing. You could push for like years, but eventually that is not sustainable. Eventually you have to let go. Some people that's a few hours, some people that's a few years. But man, when you let go, all that built up energy shoots that ball out of the water. When you allow the urge, you allow yourself to experience it. You describe the physical sensations, you're present with it. You're not trying to avoid the hard feelings. You're fully feeling it in your body without adding a story with your thoughts that are making that discomfort even worse than it needs to be, right? Because we have the first arrow of the discomfort of the urge, but then we add the second and third and like so on arrows of pain with our thoughts about, oh, I hate feeling this way. I don't want to feel uncomfortable, etc., right? So when you allow an urge, you're not resisting it. You're not pushing it underwater. You're feeling it. And you can do that with self-compassion as well, right? You can first acknowledge that it is a form of suffering to be having this urge and not meeting it. And then sometimes that opens us up more to allowing the urge. Okay. Step two is to plan all drinking at least 24 hours ahead of time. So we've got this involuntary desire that we've trained ourselves to have, and we're constantly feeling this desire without any conscious control. And remember that urges are largely unconscious and driven by our primitive brain. So after learning how to manage the urge, what we want to do next is take all of the drinking activity and put it back into our conscious control, back into the amazing prefrontal cortex, our more evolved brain that we humans have, which allows us to take control of the drinking that we do instead of being left to the whims of our reptilian brain, that less conscious brain. So we need a drink plan. And what we do is we decide at least 24 hours ahead of time that we're going to drink, and we plan it in detail. So, you know, what I did was for a while, I drank about 3 times a week on purpose and about 3 glasses of wine pre-planned. And on the alternate days, I was learning how to allow my urges, right? It was a skill I was developing. And remember, I did this because I didn't have a problem not drinking. I was wanting to learn to drink less. So if I had just done a cleanse, that was easy peasy, but I was wanting to practice that. And I'd never been able to cut back before, right? It used to be all or nothing. And now I was completely in control. It was wild. And this isn't for everyone, right? Some of you may want to quit altogether, or maybe you're at where I'm at now, which is the baseline is not drinking and then having a few rare exceptions, right? So you want to plan how many you're going to have and of what type and when ahead of time, 24 hours. Because when you do that, you can use your prefrontal cortex to plan, and you're not just basing it in the moment, which is totally driven by your primitive brain and that motivational triad, right? No bueno. Do it 24 hours in advance. All right. Step three is really important, and it's to manage your drinking thinking, right? The unconsciously conditioned thoughts you're having about alcohol and drinking. It's simple, really, but most of us get this step totally wrong when we're trying to eliminate or reduce a destructive habit in our lives. Our thoughts create our beliefs because, after all, what is a belief? Right, a thought that we've had over and over and over. That belief creates our feelings, which motivates and informs our actions, which creates our reality and the experiences we have in life. This is something that the Buddha totally figured out. In the Dhammapada, he said, delight in heedfulness, guard well your thoughts. We think that our thoughts are not within our control. And in fact, most of us don't even know what we're thinking. And we're responding to our thoughts that we aren't even aware of. But consider this, everything we do in our lives, every single thing, is because we want to feel a certain way. Most of us try to make change from the action piece of our lives. Just don't pick up the drink. Remove the alcohol from the house. You know, do a 3-week cleanse. But when we're still having the same thoughts and feelings about drinking, we're basically fighting ourselves all the way when we're just focusing on changing our actions. So if our feelings are caused by our thoughts, and everything we do in our lives is in order to feel better, this is why change can be so frustrating when we don't address our thoughts. So, you know, this mind management is exactly what I teach in detail in my Drink Less, Feel Free course, but learning how to come to grips with exactly what you're thinking and why when it comes to drinking is key. Focusing on the action, just focusing on not overdrinking, won't lead to permanent changes. Changing our thoughts and feelings about drinking, that is what leads to sustainable change. And the fourth key step, and this is the last one I'll cover today, is to stop beating yourself up for drinking. It's important to take this journey to stop overdrinking with a whole lot less judgment. I think sometimes, you know, you can wake up with a terrible hangover and feel like, all right, that's it. I'm going to get serious about this now. But as time goes by, we become less and less serious about it. And this is something that we have to address, because when we don't show up for ourselves and when we go back on the promises we make to ourselves, this chips away at our self-confidence, at our self-respect. So we need to take action when this happens, not just blow it off. But there's two ways we can do that. So one is with a lot of judgment, right? This leads to a lot of quitting, a lot of stopping and starting and stopping and starting again. And that tends to lead to nowhere. The other way is with practice, curiosity, self-compassion, self-kindness, or Maitri, as Buddhists call it, right? Of course, there were times when I drank when I didn't plan on drinking. This didn't mean that there was something wrong with me, and the same applies to you. This is a pattern that happens when we're learning. We make mistakes. So rather than beating myself up, I designed a series of questions to ask myself after making a mistake, right? That would help me learn from that mistake instead of using it as a reason to beat myself up. And here's the thing, having something like overdrinking to work on, whether it's overdrinking or overeating or whatever, it ultimately will help you live a better life in the long run. Because when you learn to manage your urges, when you learn to address attachment and desire of things that no longer serve you, you learn skills to apply to any area of your life. Learning how to be with an urge, learning how to be uncomfortable, learning how to be mindful in the midst of strong feelings, learning how to choose what's best for your higher self. That is Jedi mind stuff right there. All right, fellow human, that is such good stuff. Many of my clients say, like, overdrinking is their only issue. Like, life is pretty good otherwise, right? And some of them may even feel deep shame about this. But here's what I told a client just earlier today, even. I said, look, if you didn't have this problem, you wouldn't have to learn these skills. And these skills, they help you show up better in the world in all aspects of your life. So lucky you that you have this opportunity to learn how to train your mind. Lucky you that you have this opportunity now, before you've gone too far down that slippery slope, to take things into your own hands. There are some depth psychologists I've spoken to that say people unaware of their core wound don't have the necessary psychological material for growth. So this thing that causes so many of us suffering, it's the material for growth. No challenge, no growth. You know, similarly in Buddhism, there's talk about the different realms, right? The animal realm, the human realm, the hungry ghost realm. And then there's the god and goddess realm, right? Gods and goddesses. And they live up there. And I remember one of my teachers describing it to me like, it was kind of funny. He said, in the God realm, like you live for eons and everybody's gorgeous and brilliant and funny and feels good all the time. And the world is gorgeous. The flowers are perfect. And, you know, there's no sickness and no negative emotions. And it's just amazing for eons and eons. He said, kind of like California. I thought that was hilarious. So then he says, but the problem is, one day they start to notice the smell. And the water that the flowers are in is going putrid. And the petals start to fade. And because of so many eons of bliss, this suffering is exponential. Because they never had time to practice, never had the opportunity. So here we are, imperfect humans. This is why it's said, this is the most beneficial, like, rebirth, right? Like the most beneficial possible circumstance that we could find ourselves in, because we're imperfect and we're going to suffer and have pain, and we can learn from that and turn it into something that benefits not just us, but other beings. So what if you could look at this quote unquote problem in that way? And if there's one thing I'd like everyone who wants to drink less and feel free to know, it's that it's possible. It's possible to release this unwanted desire to overdrink. You're absolutely able to change this for yourself. And if you can't, the only thing that means is that you haven't learned the skills yet. You are not broken. You wouldn't expect to be able to do a double black diamond ski run right off the bat. You can't do it on day one because you haven't practiced enough. And in fact, another way of saying that is you haven't failed enough times. It doesn't mean you can't or you won't be able to ever ski that hard. It just means that you need to practice more, fail more. So I really want to encourage you, get back on the slope. Keep failing until eventually it becomes effortless. You know, John Ossoff says, if you're interested, you'll do what's convenient. If you're committed, you'll do whatever it takes. So are you in? Are you all in? So start on those four tools that I've given you. They really are key to helping you start. And you can also check out my free training at drinklessfeelfree.com. And there I go over three of the steps, and you can snag some free worksheets and bonus trainings as well, all for free. So go check that out, drinklessfeelfree.com. All right? Go out there and be true rebels. Go out there and show the world what true freedom is all about. Free your mind, free your life. If you like what you heard, please spread the love and share it. And if you know you need some help with this and want to learn more about how to free your mind and free your life, go to rebelbuddhist.com and grab my free Rebel Buddhist Toolkit, where you'll receive a video training on cultivating resilience, access to the private Rebel Buddhist group where I do weekly live sessions on topics just like this, and a copy of the gorgeous Rebel Buddhist Manifesto, and more for free. That's rebelbuddhist.com.